Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Marvin Smith, is still in Arizona as being a former pro football player. He is at the Super Bowl, or he was at the Super Bowl. He's now staying for additional festivities, but he will definitely be back with us next week. So as a reminder, and as usual, we will continue to bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Each week, we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, with Marvin and I each having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guest today, Dr. Gloria Walther, has been getting babies off to a strong start for over 40 years. Her masterful, loving, and unique teaching techniques comes from the wisdom of her four decades of being eye to eye with thousands of preschoolers. Now available to all in a four-volume set, Eye to Eye, the handbook on loving and successfully parenting your 3 to 5 year old child. Now, this handbook that didn't come with them, and that's one of the things that I've said for years, is that, you know, we have children and there isn't a handbook that comes with them. But this one will forever change the way parents and educators connect with young children and set the path to their successful life. Gloria, welcome to Answers for the Family.
I thank you so much, Alan. I really appreciate your invitation to join you today, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I am so glad to have you. As many of our listeners know, we spend a lot of time talking about teenagers, and oftentimes we're talking about how to deal with issues after they've made some bad choices. And what I love about having you on the show is we get to talk about some of the things as to how we can deal with our children when they're younger in hopes that we improve our chances of not having to deal with some of those issues a little later on in their life. So, you know, I see the value of being able to really communicate with our children starting at a very early age. So thank you for putting together such a great handbook.
Well, thank you. It's been a real joyful journey, actually, just a lifetime of working with children. I've been teaching at preschool for over 40 years, and I taught at UCLA for 17 years, and so I've worked with teachers, I've worked with directors of schools, I've worked with parents, and the 3 to 5 year old is such a magical age for me, because every time I meet a 3 year old, I look at them and I know that in the last 3 years, nothing that I have learned compares to what they have learned, because they have decoded the language. They have figured out how to walk. Yeah. They figured out how to, you know, eat. I mean, they're so, if you stop and think for 1 minute what you've done in the last 3 years, there's no way to, I mean, you just drop on the floor and go, you've done so much more than I have in the last 3 years. So when I look at them, they, and they're gatherers, they're great gatherers. So I think that they just look at you like, oh, you think I'm something. And I do. I really do. So I'm looking at them and they're looking at me, and it's, upon a first meeting, I'll wait patiently, hold back until they approach me. And then we have this like they can find me in a room full of 50 people. They will grab my leg and ask me a question because somehow they know that I will tell them the truth. You know, they are great gatherers, and so they do know who to ask and who they can trust. Instantly, they seem to know that, and so it's a real honor for me to be the what my parents call the child whisperer. The parents in my school have named me such, which is quite an honor. But I listen very well. You know, it's my gift.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you know, and that is, it is so beautiful. And one of the things that you just pointed out and is that instinctively, that even at that age, that they are recognizing who to engage with. I mean, I think that's so beautiful that out of the entire room, and as I've mentioned in previous shows, I was a room dad when my boys were in kindergarten or started, you know, from kindergarten. And I thought that was such a great time, and I was so fortunate, as were my boys, very fortunate, but I was fortunate to be in a classroom of such an incredible kindergarten teacher. I mean, she was phenomenal, and you could tell how much these kids loved her, how they were drawn towards her, and as you're saying, they seemed to know that this was somebody that was safe, this was somebody that they could engage with. So I think where I'd like to go with this is that what, you know, you've got this magic, you've acquired it, or you've taught yourself this over the years, but how can parents who just either don't feel like they're engaging with their child to the level that they would like to, how can parents really effectively engage that child and establish that same type of rapport?
Well, that's such a beautiful question, Ellen. So I think I would just start with really listening. And I know that adults, we're all distracted with our iPhones and our gizmos, phones, everything is distracting us. And so if we can just put those things down and get on eye level with the child. There's a reason the book is called Eye to Eye. It's because, I think I'll just jump to that for a second and just say, when I was observing in a preschool many years ago, I was watching this little boy, and he took a pen, a black pen marker, and he did a dot on the page. And then he moved the dot over to the right, and he made another dot, but he made it really, he spent some time, you know, drawing on making those two dots, and then he put the pencil down, and his teacher had moved away from there, and I just moved forward, and I got down on my knees, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, "Can you please tell me about your picture?" And he smiled. He goes, "It's my mommy." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Could you please tell me what part of your mommy that you drew?" And this little child, who was 3 years old, pointed to his nostrils. And every time I tell that story, and I try to tell that to everyone I know, then they instantly get that anybody taller, you know, any adult will talk to a child, but not get on eye level.
Exactly.
And so when you get on eye level, you're ready to receive information. You're ready to listen. And so you are very much telling your child, "I'm here for you, and I'm not going to pick up my phone. I'm not going to watch the TV or look over your head and have another discussion. I'm here for you right now." And just when you're putting your body in a position, whether you get down on your knees or in a small chair or sit down and lift them up or just lift them, when you get face-to-face and eye level with the child, you are already demonstrating a respect and an honoring, and "I am ready to listen." So that's one beginning place. But in fuller answer to your question, I think there's another story that I'll tell you, if I may.
Please.
About, I was at Ohio State before I did my undergraduate work, and I was there, and I had earned the right to be in the classroom, and I earned the right to be one of the people that got to help the children. And so there was a moment that they took, they wanted to show a film on a projector, an old-fashioned projector. And so all the children gathered in front of the screen, and then the lights were flipped off. And a little boy near me just started screaming at the top of his lungs, and he just wouldn't stop screaming. So I reached over, I got him, I lifted him up, and I flipped the light switch on, all in one swoop. Uh-huh. So I flipped the light on, and I calmly whispered in his ear, I just said, listen, we have to turn the lights off because we really want to show you this film. And in the film, it's so cool, you're going to love it because it's about la 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 la. And so he got on the he calmed down and he sat next to me, and I said, nobody in this room is going to turn the light off except for you. So number one, I wanted him to feel safe, so I held him. I spoke calmly to him. I explained why we need to turn the light off. And then the tricky part for adults is to give this child power.
Exactly.
To give him control, right? And so I said to him, when you're ready, if you're ready, and you want to see this film I just told you about, will you please turn the light off so we can, because I explained about the projector and the light has to go through the projector and you can't see it unless the room light is off. So in a very short time, he smiled at me and reached over for the light and turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we watched the film together. So that's the basis. He taught me so much that day. I just thought, okay, I know what to do with children. I need to make them feel safe, explain the reasoning for what I need from him, and then give him some control, some power.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. To me, yeah. That's what's so beautiful about that is that in one very brief event, you were able to do so much. Not only learn so much, but do so much for him, and encompassing it with empowerment. That he was just learning that he can be empowered, and he can do it in such a way, in a very calm way. You know, mm-hmm. and I think that's sometimes where some parents, you know, make their mistake is that, you know, from, you know, and all of us, I mean, I'm not putting anybody out there, you know, is from the standpoint of engaging them, we can't just engage them, you know, at the same level. One of the things that we learn in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, if that child screams or if that child is raging or they're having a temper tantrum, for us to be able to match and pace them and bring them down to the same level and get it very calm like you did. You got it very calm and then empower them. Once, but they realized, and what I love about the story, and I don't know if everybody got it, was he was empowered when he was calm at your level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that,
exactly.
I love that. So that we're not empowering them at the level of having a fit and then we're just giving them whatever they want to make the fit go away, because I think that at that point, you know, that's when they're learning that the power comes from the fit and not from the calm.
It's external rather than internal.
Absolutely. I love it.
Yay! You're so fun to talk to, Alan, I gotta say. There's another thing I'll tell you quickly.
Please.
We also, at our school, we have, you know, those little rubber ice shapes that you can buy at IKEA and various places, but they're just made of rubber, and you end up with an ice in the shape of a dinosaur, in the shape of a watermelon half, or in the shape of a stick or something. Anyway, so we have several ice trays like that. So if a child at school gets hurt, and first we don't scoop them up and rescue them and fix them. We just look at them and say, what do you need? And so then they'll say, I'd like ice, or I'd like this, or I'd like that. But typically at my school, it's ice because the ice is very cool. And so then I'll say, can you walk or do you need to be helped? And so then they'll say, I can walk. And so if another child had been nearby and also got them, I'll bring the second child as well. To say, do you want to help your friend? And so then the two of them maybe will come with me. We'll go into the kitchen and we'll clean up the injury. And they'll offer all these different shapes of ice. And they're in the trays. And so I'll offer the trays. They'll say, it's the watermelon. I want the watermelon one. I go, okay. Then I bring out the tray of the watermelon and I hold the tray and I say, touch the one that you want. So what they do is they touch one and then I scoop it out from the bottom. And then do you want a cup or a paper towel? And so then they'll decide, and then they'll be second on it. But what's happened, more importantly, all this is all the, and then the friend helps, or like that. So there's discussion, and there's comforting. But what happens is I'm taking the child from the emotional side of the brain, where they're just crying, to the intellectual side of the brain, where they have to make choices. So a lot of these conflicts and these problems for parents, if you can, if your child is wailing or having a tantrum or in the emotional side just expressing their feelings, you don't want to discount those feelings ever because they're important and they're their feelings. But you do have an opportunity to invite them over to the intellectual side of the brain where they can go, well, you know what I should have done? I should have done this instead of that. And then that wouldn't have happened. So once you get them to the intellect, then you can ask them questions like, what's a better idea? What will you do the next time? What's a solution for this problem? And so the child is very much a part, an active part of changing their behavior.
See, that and that just makes perfect sense to me. So why don't you, if you walk us through a little bit, because I know that, you know, the one thing that we hear more than anything else is, you know, the parent that says, I just don't know what to do. When they go out of control, I don't know what to do. So not so much as far as, you know, well, they've injured themselves, but they just are having a tantrum. They're not getting what they want or whatever. Yeah. So if you can just walk us through of one of the best ways to handle, again, when we're dealing with this sort of 3 to 5 year old.
Okay. I've got a good one for something that happened at school some time ago, but I was just in the room and I'm looking to the right and the children are all engaged in play and I look to the left and everybody's busy. They're doing a puzzle. They're on the floor. They're working. Everything's like, it's like harmonious. I'm thinking, oh, this is a rare moment. This is great, you know? And then at my feet in an instant, there was a boy and a girl on the floor, literally pummeling, just pounding on each other. They were white knuckled, angry. And they were both so, so mad, and they were just pounding each other's bodies, and I'm rolling around this line, what happened here? And so I physically said, you come with me, and I took them both, and we went outside, and I just looked at them, and they were gone. I mean, they were just like raging mad, and I just held my finger up in front of the boy, and I looked at him in the eye, and I said to him, how many candles do you need to blow out before your heart is ready to receive love? And he looked at me and he goes, I'm going to need 17 candles. I said, wow. But you are really mad. He goes, I am mad, you know. So I held up my finger and he blew. And I said, one. And then he blew again. I said, two. We got to 17. And he had calmed down quite a bit. I said, are you ready to receive love? And he said, no, I'm going to need a few more candles. And I said, okay. So I held my finger, and he just blew 5 more times. And so then he looked at me, he said, my heart is ready to receive love. I said, okay. So I looked over at the little girl. I said, do you need some candles? And she said, I do. I need 7 candles. I said, all right. So I held my finger up, and she blew 7 times. And so then I said, are you ready? She said, my heart is ready to receive love. So then I asked them, the two of them, I looked at them, I said, can you please tell me what happened? This is a key for parents. Can you tell me what happened before you got so upset? So I looked at the boy, and he said, well, I looked in the room, and there were clothes everywhere. There was a dress on the table. There was a scarf on the chair. And the desk had stuff on it. And he was talking about all these dress-up clothes that had been spread around the room. And he said, I saw that, and I realized that if my friends wanted to go dress up, they wouldn't be able to because the dresses and the clothes are everywhere. So I put them all away. I said, you did what? And he said, I put them away. I said, you matched them where they belong? He goes, yeah. And I said, did you want to dress up? He goes, no, but my friends might want to. And I just looked at him. I said, you were doing something really lovely and really kind and very, very, you know, very considerate. And I said, that was a really beautiful thing that you were doing. And I looked at the little girl, and her jaw had dropped open. And she went, oh. So then I looked at her, and I said, can you tell me what was happening before you got so angry? And she said, yeah, I was walking the dress-up room, and I thought, I'm going to make that room the most beautiful it ever could be. And so I looked for the most beautiful dress in the whole school, and I spread it carefully on the table. And then I found the prettiest scarf in the whole school, and I put it on the chair. And I had almost arranged the room to where it was the most beautiful. And then I had to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom, and when I came back, Alex had put away all my stuff. And then I looked at Alex, and his mouth had dropped, his jaw dropped open. And he goes, "Oh." So now we have two children who have seen each other's perspectives and listened. And so I said, "Well, what's the solution for this problem?" This is what I ask all day long. "What's the solution for this problem?" And they looked at me and they go, "I just don't know. I said, "We need some help." And so we went back into the classroom and they were reading a story at the time. I asked the teacher, "Would you please put the book down? We really need your help and we need it now." And so all these 3 and 4 year olds are sitting in the circle. And I looked at the children. I said, "Can you tell them what happened?" They go, no, you tell." So I told exactly that same story to a group of 3 and 4 year olds. And I said, "Does anybody here have a solution?" And a little 4-year-old stuck her hand in the air and said, "I do." And I looked at her. I said, "Do you have a solution?" She goes, "Yes, I do." I said, "What is your solution?" She said, "We just need a sign. We need a sign that says, 'I'm going to the bathroom,' and then people will know, not to disturb our work." And I looked around. I go, "That's a great idea." And then another little hand shot up. And this child said, "I have another solution." I said, "What's your solution?" And he said, "Sometimes we're not going to the bathroom, but we don't want our work disturbed. So we need a sign that says, 'I'll be right back.'" And the children said to me, the children said to me, will you show us the letters to write the signs?" I said, "Yes. What else do you need?" They said, "We need paper. We need a hole punch, because sometimes we'll need some yarn to hang it up places, for." We went outside, and the people who wanted to make the signs made the signs, and other children were digging in the sand and riding bikes. But they made these signs, and they used these signs for a while. And it was just a phenomenal experience for me to see them take a dilemma, a difficult one, and figure it out, and have it follow through all the way to realization.
Well, so, I got to tell you, yeah. I wish that we were doing this as a video podcast, because then everybody could see that's the huge grin on my face. I have this huge grin because I am as you're telling this story, I'm visualizing it, and I love it. I mean, it's just, I love the fact that they're coming up with solutions. They're learning about how to communicate. They're learning, but they're doing it in a fashion that is very positive. They're doing it in a fashion that is communal. What we can do that helps everybody. Wow. I mean, again, like I said, I've just the whole time you're saying, this smile is getting bigger and bigger. I'm thinking my face is going to get stuck like this. So, yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. I love it. But and that's what you do. I mean, a lot of the book, and again, for anybody out there. In fact, can I give your website? It's waltherschool.org. So it's waltherschool.org. And so, I mean, for anybody out there, if you want to follow along. And you kind of follow along with us. You can open up another screen. Those of you that are at your computer right now. Now, obviously, if you're out there driving, don't try this. But follow along with us, because this concept of communicating at such a positive level and such a communal level, where we're focusing on what is the betterment for everybody, Sure. And I think, I may be looking at it on a much bigger scale, but the only way we're going to make that shift and sort of get back to that way of thinking is to start right here. We need to have three to 5-year-olds focusing on what can I do for the betterment of everybody in this class? How can we find a solution that's good for all of us? Not a solution that works for me and everybody else can fend for themselves.
Right. On a more personal note, there's another strategy that's pretty effective for parents, I think. We had a family that was in the process of moving, and their son had been in the same home for his whole life, and he had been very comfortable. He knew what was coming. He knew the schedule. He was very confident, very comfortable and all that until he found out about the move, and then he just lost it. He was easily provoked. He cried a lot. He was frustrated. He really started having really difficult behaviors and stuff, and the mom came to me, and we talked about it. And so I just suggested that she take his hand and take his little four-year-old hand and put it in hers and just hold it, and then just hold his little finger and say, "Let's find out what you need right now, Dashiell." His name is Dashiell. And so she held his little finger and she said, "Are you hungry? Check in with your own body. Ask your body, are you hungry?" He goes, "No, Mommy, I'm not hungry." He took his next finger. She said, "Are you thirsty?" He said, "No, I'm not thirsty." And then she took his next finger. "Are you tired?" He said, "No, I'm not really tired." And then she took his other finger and said, "Do you need to run? Do you just need to run around in the backyard for a bit?" And he smiled at her, and he took his thumb and held it. And he said, "Mommy, what I need is a hug." So then what happened after she did this with him, you know, for a little short couple of weeks is all, she said she saw him over in the corner, and he was taking his fingers, and he was asking himself, "Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Am I tired?" Anyway, so he became able to self-regulate. Mm-hmm. And check in with himself and see, what do I need right now? Why am I upset right now? Let me figure this out. I've got strategies.
Wow. I can think of quite a few adults that could probably benefit from that as well.
Yeah, I do it all the time. Yeah, I think basically everything that I do, I think, does translate to upper, you know, older ages and grades and stuff and into adulthood. I told a candle story to one of my friends in my knitting class, and she told her husband, and when I met him, he said, "Oh, you're the girl with the candles." He said, "She comes home every night frustrated, and I ask her, how many candles do you need?" So, it helps them work things out. But, yeah.
Well, now with that said, as we're talking about the fact that this does translate into other ages, we have an instant message coming across right now, and mm-hmm. from a listener, and this one reads, "My 9-year-old son has been diagnosed with ADHD, probably one of the most difficult cases according to my doctor. Does the eye-to-eye technique work with this age group and for teens, as I have a family and friends with a bit older kids experiencing various levels of this condition as well? Thank you so much." And it's signed KC.
I would say qualitatively, I would just say that many of these things do help children. But with ADHD, at whatever level, you certainly would go to your doctor and do what they say. But also, some of it's just talking and finding out, what is my child, where does my child linger? Like if you look, you know, you set up the environment and you say, "Well, my child does have ADHD, but he really loves puzzles. Or he really loves Legos, or he or she really loves to do certain activities. They like tactile things." Then what you want to do is spend your time extending the attention span, of course. And so you would just find out where they light and what subject or what arena or where they do feel the safest and the most in control for the lengthiest, you know, just time-wise, where do they linger? Where do they want to be? And figure out projects and activities and things for them to do, spending more time with that environment. So the environment that most closely makes them feel comfortable, safe, and wanting to linger on in an area. And I think that does help the children that are in this predicament. You know, the short attention span. So your goal is to increase the attention span. So I would say, yes, many places in the book, it talks about how to increase their attention span and how to talk with them and calm them. And yes, I would say that it does address many different issues. There's no chapter on ADHD, but there is lots of information on how to talk with them and set them and make them feel safe and explain things to them. And I think that the power of touch is very big when it comes to children who have attention deficits. So, but it depends on the child, of course. So that would be, you know, just take it with an individual look at each child.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break with everybody out there. We want to keep your attention. We'll be back in about 1 minute. We are talking to Dr. Gloria Walther. The book, the 4-volume set is Eye to Eye, the Handbook on Loving and Successfully Parenting Your 3 to 5-Year-Old Child. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Catch Them Doing Something Good. Stay with us.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We're talking with Dr. Gloria Walther. And when we left, we talked about Catch Them Doing Something Good. So, Gloria, I'd mentioned that when I was a room dad, starting at kindergarten and actually even in preschool a little bit, but I started a little program called Catch Them Doing Something Good. So, and it was set up in such a way that we had little rocks that had little positive affirmations or pictures of little animals or something like that. And again, I'd love to say that I thought this up, but I got this from that first kindergarten teacher that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And it was catch them doing something good. And so the situation, if things started to get a little bit out of control in one part of the class, the instinct would be for a lot of people to go and, you know, if it's Johnny and Sally that are in the corner doing things, you know, Johnny and Sally, you stop that right now. But instead, mm-hmm. the focus was when they were all asked to come sit in front of, in this case, it was me. So the teacher said, okay, everybody come sit in front of Mr. Cardoza. He's going to read us a story about, you know, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Betty would, you know, come over and sit down right in front, and then you know, Stevie came over and sat down in front, but you still had the problem with the other two children in the back. She ignored the other two children in the back and said, I'd like everybody's attention. I'd like you to see how great Betty and Stevie are doing. They're sitting right down in front of Mr. Cardoza. Their legs are crossed. Their arms are in their lap. They're focused, and they're ready to hear the story. And I thought that was so beautiful because it was all about catching them doing something good. And I, my, you know, takeoff from that was that I started bringing the little things, and so I would give them something. Well, nobody had to tell the two kids in the back to stop doing what they were doing because we weren't giving them attention. We weren't, you know, drawing everybody to them. We were drawing them to what was going on that was good. So talk to us a little bit about that as a, you know, as a way to engage, you know, these kids by focusing on that positive.
Yeah, I like that. I like also to get them, find avenues, find strategies to get them to think for themselves and to act for themselves. And so another example I would tell you about was that I think is relating in the same pocket of catching to do something good. Is there were three children playing. There were three girls that were playing in the dress-up room, and they were having the time of their lives. I mean, they were having so much fun, and it was perfectly all right, except they were screaming at the top of their lungs. And so I walked in there, and I said, oh, gosh, I said, I need to ask you a question. I said, why do you think I came in this room? And the rooms are all open, so I just moved over to their area. But I said, why am I here? And they said, gosh, we're being too loud. And I said, what is the problem with us, with you being loud? And they said, well, you can't hear the other children, and they can't hear each other. And I said, yeah, that's exactly the problem. So I said, do you have a solution for this problem? And they said, well, we could play the same game, but we'll be more quiet. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. But what if you forget? And they said, well, and so I'm always asking them for consequences. And so they said, well, if we're too loud, and, you know, if we get loud again, then we'll have to take our costumes off and we'll have to play a different game. And I said, you know, that's a really appropriate consequence. So well done. And so I said, I want you to have every bit of joy. I don't want you to have any less joy. But if you can keep it down, you get to keep doing, you know, what you're doing. And so they said, okay. So we agreed, and I went back to the art area where I was working with some children. And then in a very short time, they got loud again. So I walked into the room, and two of them looked at me, and they just said, oh, you know, and they took their clothes, the dress-up clothes off, and they hung them up, and they walked out of the room and went off to play somewhere else. But the third little girl looked at me, and she was squared her shoulders and said, my mommy gives me three chances. And I said, yes, and Elizabeth, I give you one. And can I tell you why I give you one? And she said, yes. So I said, there are 43 children in the school, so if I had to tell every child to please be more quiet 43 times, that would make me kind of grouchy. But if every single day I had to tell all the children twice, that would be 186 times. What am I doing? I'm doing my math all wrong now. But anyway, I doubled and then tripled.
Yeah.
I'm nervous now. But so then when I got to the great big number, her eyes were just big, you know, and she said, and I said, more importantly, Elizabeth, that would make me super grouchy, of course, but I said, more importantly, this is what I wouldn't get to say to you. I wouldn't get to say, oh my, Elizabeth, what an interesting costume you put on today. You have really shown me a new way of putting our clothes together, and it's marvelous. But I got to tell you, Alan, I like to whisper. I like to be really close and not, like, tell the whole room. It's more intimate just to say, wow, that is a phenomenal outfit. I've never seen anything like that before. That's really cool. And, Elizabeth, I wouldn't get to say, gosh, what a great building that you're building. And I've never seen a building like that in the history of the Walter School. Just never seen one. It's just fantastic. And another thing I wouldn't get to say, Elizabeth, is I wouldn't get to say, I want to tell you, I saw your friend, and she was sad. And you walked over and sat down next to her. And now look at her face. Her eyes are just blazing. Her mouth, she's smiling. She's so happy. And just because you went and sat next to her and put your arm near her and touched her, and look, she's really comforted by what you did. So these are my external, you know, reward thing would be to say those things. And so in this case, Elizabeth looked at me. She took her costume off and she hung it up, and she turned to leave the room. And I said to her, I said, Elizabeth, may I offer you the most beautiful invisible costume that you have ever worn in your life? She said, yes. So then I said, okay, tell me what you're wearing. Tell me all about your invisible costume. So she created this glittery, rainbowy color, all this fabulous outfit. So I said, are you ready? And she said, yes. And I just went, phew. And she threw her shoulders back and walked out of the room so proud. But what I'm trying to say, Alan, and I'll try to sum it up, is just basically, instead of just the external reward, I try to figure out a way for them to take ownership and them to take pride and them to take on the reason, the value, and to own it. for them to own it.
Now, you mentioned about the giving additional chances, and I think that that's kind of an important thing for us to touch on, especially for parents and especially for new parents. Now, I think that for many of us, and I'm certainly included in this, you know, especially with our first child, we might start out giving too many too many chances, and I think one of the most difficult things is that how do you change that? I mean, you feel like, you know, if you've said, so take that parent that gives their daughter, okay, I'm only going to tell you this three times. You know, how do they reverse out of that? Because it's a common thing that many of us do. And how do we reverse out to get to the point to where they're going to respond to the first time?
Well, that's, to me, it's not hard because because I don't have children, first of all. But I do have children. I have children at school. So if a parent asked me one time, why do I say, Lily, 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 and she doesn't come, and you say, Lily, and she comes. And I really think long and hard before I say Lily, and Lily knows it. So the first time Lily didn't respond to me, I went and got her. And I said, Lily, I need to tell you something. And I called your name and you didn't come. And I need to tell you how important it is that you come. I said, first of all, I just want to keep you safe. That's my big job. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to keep you safe. As a parent or as a teacher, your job is to protect your child. So I said, may I lift you up and just show you something? And she said, sure. So I lifted her up and I said, just because I'm tall, I can see all the way to the backyard. I can see the very back of the yard. And if there's trouble coming and I say, Lily, and you don't come, you could be harmed. So I'm going to ask you right now, from now on, as long as you and I know each other, will you please come when I say Lily? And she'll see the point. You know, she'll say, okay. And I said, but I'm going to make you a promise. I'm not going to call you until I absolutely need you. So if I think I'm going to need you a little while, I'm not going to call you. If I'm going to need you pretty soon, but not yet, I'm not going to call you. But when I say Lily, I really want you to come right then. And so she does. And so the moral is basically deciding, do you want your child to be a negotiator? You know, do you want them to? Because that's what you're building. You're saying, oh, she said three times the last time. But next time it's going to be five times. Next time it's going to be 10 times, whatever.
Right.
But, there's a Dr. Dobson who told a story that I love about, which led me to the Lily story, which he said he had all these children that would come into his office and they had troubles. And he said to a third grader one time, you know, how many times does your mom call you before she really means it? And the child looked up, she said, 17. And he said, how do you know she really means it? And this child said, well, she doesn't really mean it until she stamps her foot. Her voice is this octave. It's this high. It's this loud, and her face is red, and she's stomping her foot. That's when she means it. So you have a choice, actually, as an adult. You can either go to that 17th time every time, or you can stop and say, I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to think about it before I call him. But in order to make a change, you have to actually sit down at the table and have a family meeting and say, you know what? I've been calling you and just calling you and just calling you. And sometimes you answer and sometimes you don't. Sometimes I have to get mad. But let's make a plan. Let's make a promise to each other that I'm not going to call you until I actually need you. And I want you to come when I need that. To get the change of behavior, you really have to sit down and say, this is what's been going on. And I'm going to change now. And I'm going to ask you to change. And this is why. It's just, we're going to make a family respect. In our family, we respect each other and we honor each other, but this hasn't been working for me. So let's talk about a way that we can agree.
Right. So what you're saying is just make sure that you've explained the reasoning behind. It isn't just, okay, it's I'm going to call you once, you're going to come because I'm the parent. Boom.
Yeah. No, you not know. Just because I'm tall. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. Yeah, so make sure that you explain some of the reasonings why. I love the part about the respect or the potential danger, you know, that can be there. And again, they're setting the stage for how they're going to respond when they get older. So, like you said, which one do you want? Now
you got a choice.
Just as you're giving them a choice.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that you mention in the book that I think is great is you talk about humor. We all love humor. So let's talk a little bit about how humor can be used to really assist in the communication, you know, with your child.
Yeah, I think it really does ease, it's sort of like the grease, isn't it? It's sort of like if parents will say, I can't get my child dressed. So you go, well, you know, we can't, you know, at school, the children, if they want to take their shoes off, they can. If they want to put them on, they can, until a certain time. But there's a certain time when we're going to be transitioning to circle and then go outside that we need them to put their shoes on. So I'll just make an announcement. Please put your shoes on your collarbone. And they said, where's our collarbone? You know, then we get to talk about bones, which is great, you know. But then they quickly run for their shoes. They go, no, on our feet. So the simple question of like, okay, can you please put them on your shoulders? You know, and they go, no, on your shins. Where are my shins? You know, so I ask them to put their shoes everywhere, and then when they come bring their shoes and socks to me, I'll take the socks and then shoes. I go, which ones go first? And they'll go the socks. You know, and they'll just think it's really funny. And so then I go, which foot? And so again, they're making choices of which foot gets the sock first. You put on two socks, you put on both, you know, the sock and then the shoe, or anyway, just ways of doing that. But they love that game. They love the game of, you know, please put your shoes on your elbows. And they'll come out sometimes and they'll put their shoes, you know, on their elbows and they'll think it's hilarious, you know, but then they'll be ready to put them on their feet and they're ready to go, you know. So instead of everybody put your shoes on now, you know, put your clothes away, you know, all that, it's silliness. And then we'll also say for a snack, we'll say it's last call for rhinoceros ears. You know, I go, wow, you should say last call for snack. I said, you can't really say that for 40 years. It's just too boring. And they'll laugh hysterically, but they really get the humor and they really love the humor. And it really does make them more beside you and cooperative rather than just giving directive after directive. And I would just also say, ask more questions than you give directives to children. It's like, would you rather put this shoe on first or that one? Would you rather, you know, wear this shirt or that shirt? Giving them choices and rather than just put this on, you know, get dressed, eat. You know, it's so much better of, you know, where are you going to put the peas on your plate? You know, where are you going to put them? Asking more questions, I think, works.
I couldn't agree more. We have a question or comment that came in, and this one actually came in via email. So it came in, it was already here this morning. So I would just want to share that I appreciate for some of the people out there, you read the press release. You are maybe working in the middle of the day, so you know that you can't be there to send a question in. But to email it in ahead of time, I will do everything I can to ask. And you would send those to Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at transportingteens.com. And if you send those questions like this one, I will try to get them on the air. This one reads, this is absolutely fascinating, the concept of eye-to-eye communication. I am a sixth grade teacher with a great group of kids this year. Since I read about your book on Allen's site this last week, I've been paying attention to various students in my class that are sometimes a bit challenging. I have noticed their inability to make eye contact with me and with other students. These are the students who seem to have difficulty concentrating, lack of patience on accomplishing and achieving closeness to others. I ordered the book last night and am so looking forward to learning more and sharing it with my fellow teachers, especially if there is something we can do to help our students.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yes.
That's so cool. Well, and I think this stuff really works at the 12 years old, at a really pivotal age as well. So it's marvelous. I'm so excited that she will be reading that.
And getting it out there to the other teachers. I think that although you know we say that it's Answers for the Family, the teachers make such a huge difference by having the teachers like yourself or like this teacher that is called in that is looking at things. I love the fact that they're looking at how they're making eye contact, how they're concentrating, you know, if they're showing patience, how they're achieving closeness with others. You know, that to me says this is somebody who gets it. They're paying attention. They're trying to do everything they can to help these children grow to become the best they can be. So, again, it's wonderful, and I thank you so much. And I just looked up, and Gloria, unfortunately, we are out of time. But that's what happens when you're enjoying yourself. The time just flies by. But thank you so much for this. And again, for everybody out there. And Gloria, they can get the book just by going to the website, or should there be any other places?
Amazon.com, actually. Not to the website, but Amazon.com.
Okay,
just
yeah.
Go to my name or the book, yes.
Yes. So, and if anybody that's driving, if you're not able to write this down, you can always go to our site. It's answers4thefamily.com. Go to our site. We have a blog on there. So not only can you comment, but if you give us a question, like I was driving and I couldn't write that down, either to get the website or any information on any of our guests, feel free to do so. Gloria, again, thank you so much for joining us. And for everybody out there, please be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Alan, thank you so much. Bye.
Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.